Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. This is day two of the season of The Witch, and today we're going to be talking about black horror. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying, you know, this is mostly based on movies that I've seen. There are tons of movies, and if you're interested in this topic of African-Americans and their view on horror movies and also like their contributions overall to horror itself, there is a wonderful documentary on the streaming service Shudder, S-H-U-D-D-E-R, ooh, like Shudder, which is called Black, it's called Film Noir, if I remember correctly, or Horror Noir, I'm sorry, it's called Horror Noir. And it's a documentary about just kind of the history of movies directed by African-Americans, starring African-American actors and actresses, and also just the impact and the I love that the African-American community has for horror movies in general. The great thing about horror movies and monster movies in particular, I think, is that a lot of times the monsters themselves can be stand-ins for people that are on the fringes of society or that are being ostracized by society. So in this documentary, for example, they talk a lot about how, you know, vampires and werewolves can be stand-ins for and how people react to them in these movies are stand-ins for racism. If you talk to a lot of people that are part of the LGBTQ community in Hollywood, they also talk about the otherness of monsters and of the characters in horror movies and how they can be stand-ins for people that are LGBT, LGBTQ. And also there's a lot of fascinating interviews with different people related to that. But my point of view is really that I think just like with anything, as a viewer, you kind of bring a lot of yourself to movies, and that's not to say that the artists themselves, that the people that are making movies don't have an intention. They obviously do, but you know, that can change based on the people that's viewing it. However, I really wanted to kind of take some time to highlight black horror movies, just because the majority of them aren't just straight up horror movies. You know, like, these movies really are commenting on other things, and even though they're horror movies, there really are ways of addressing other issues. And so I kind of wanted to talk about a couple of different movies, some that are fun. Most of these movies are fun. Most of these movies are actually really good, and some that I think really have a lot to say. And I'm just going to cherry pick some from the 70s on to now, and that's going to be our focus for the day. And like I said, I'm not an expert on this. I'm as I've said before, I am Mexican American. I am not African American. I'm not black. So I can't really speak to how black audiences, how they're taking these movies in, but I can speak to what I've seen in these movies and the themes that are being brought up, and sometimes it's in your face, like you can't really get around it, what they're trying to get at, even if you're not African-American or even if you're not part of the black community. So I wanted to take today to kind of highlight a lot of these movies, because I think, unfortunately, outside of some very recent ones, a lot of times people kind of dismiss them, because like, as I talked about last season when I was talking about movies like Shaft and Blackula, particularly Blackula, exploitation movies are sometimes a way for, yes, at the end of the day, they're about making money, but you can really kind of sneak in a lot of stuff in these movies in order to really kind of address a lot of different things that you wouldn't be able to address in a straightforward movie. So the first movie that I wanted to kind of highlight today is a movie that I think, outside of like people that are really into movies or outside of people that were around the 70s probably don't remember. That's Ganja and Hess. Ganja and Hess is a 1973 movie directed by Billy Gunn. Not that Billy Gunn, not Mr. Ass. Technically, I guess it's Bill Gunn, but I think of it as Billy Gunn. This movie stars Dwayne Jones, and it follows the titular Dr. Hess and Marlena Clark's Ganja, they're a couple that we follow, and they get infected by this, they get stabbed by this knife, which ends up giving them a desire to drink blood. So this is basically a vampire movie. But the great thing about this, and I think the great thing about a lot of these movies, is that even though, there's a central monster, yes, it's a vampire movie, and it's a take on vampires, really what we end up really focusing on, I think, is just how society views these main characters. For example, Dwayne Jones plays Dr. Hess Green. Dwayne Jones, who, of course, was in Night of the Living Dead, and who probably was one of the first African-American leads in a horror movie. He plays Dr. Hess Green, so we already have someone who's a doctor and basically kind of being how people view him as someone of means. You know, there's scenes in this movie where, they talk about, there's a scene, if I remember correctly, where they have a butler, and Ganja's like kind of giving them the third degree about, like, you got to go get me grits and you got to go get me grapes and things like that. And kind of just not really flaunting their wealth. But at the same time, it's like almost like this is unheard of, that there's wealthy black people. And as fucked up as that sounds, I mean, that that is a lot of what the focus is on, is kind of on this disparity of their station in life, and intermixed obviously with horror, because they're basically vampires. We also get a lot of religious overtones in this movie. This movie is just really, really interesting, and I think I just kind of wanted to touch upon it briefly, just because I think it's something that people aren't really aware of. And as I mentioned, Shudder earlier, Shudder, for those that don't know, is it's basically horror movie Netflix. It's a streaming service that dedicates itself just to horror movies. The people that started were the people that used to do Fangoria, and I bring it up in this sense not just because of that documentary, but also Ganja and Hess is available on Shudder. So if you want to track it down, if you don't have a subscription, if you've never heard of Shudder, you can get like a free 7-day subscription, and there's a lot of great stuff, a lot of recent stuff. They do some of their own, but the cool thing about it is that you can find like these movies that really aren't super well known, such as Ganja and Hess, on there. I want to say another one of the movies I'm going to talk about later, Tales from the Hood, is also on there as well, and I believe Candyman. But this service also has stuff by Argento and just like tons of slashers. It's great. If you love horror, I can't recommend it enough. But Ganja and Hess is definitely worth checking out, just because of what it's talking about. Jumping forward to the 1990s, 1992, I wanted to point out Candyman. Candyman, played himself by Tony Todd, who in a way is probably best known for that. Interestingly enough, he also played the same character that Dwayne Jones played in the remake a few years before this, 1980 remake of Night of the Living Dead. But Tony Todd is great. Like, he has this very commanding voice, and he looks commanding. He's a great actor. He he was a stage actor before this. I believe he was Juilliard trained. In any case, the guy's a great actor. And Candyman is this interesting movie, because like, I remember I was like 11 or 10 or 11 when this movie came out, and I would see posters for it, and just the posters themselves would freak me out, because it was like, you see a knife or like a hook and bees, and there was blood. It just seemed really fucking weird. But the great thing about Candyman, even though it is a straight up horror movie where Tony Todd's going around killing people, at the core of it, it's a love story, kind of like Ganja and Hess. You know, like, we follow Tony Todd and Virginia Madsen, who Tony Todd, his character Daniel Robitaille was killed because he was a slave who was in love with a white woman. So they were killed, and now he's kind of stalking people in the projects in Chicago. I can't remember the name of the projects. Regardless, it doesn't matter. But and also he's kind of almost like the boogeyman or Bloody Mary, where you have to say his name. You say his name three times and he comes back. And he's a killer, but at the end of the day, he's doing it all because his love was forbidden and he's trying to get revenge, and unfortunately he's taking it out on the people of his own community. But Candyman's it's an interesting movie because as much as it's a horror movie, like I said, it's as much of that, it's a love story, and it's interesting to see that. And in a lot of horror movies, we see this kind of mixture of the monster and being in love with one of the main characters. The Creature from the Black Lagoon, Dracula, Frankenstein's monster to a certain extent, the Mummy, like they do a lot of what they do it for love. Literally in The Shape of Water with I can't remember his name, but the aquatic man in that movie, where he literally falls in love with the main character, and it ends up on this note of them being together, and in a way this movie kind of ends up in that way too, although it's really kind of fucked up. This movie is really, really, it's actually really good. I think it's underrated, to be honest with you, just because I think it's somewhat, even though Candyman himself I think is somehow kind of worked his way into the cultural zeitgeist and kind of stuck around, I don't think people remember this movie very much. It was actually remade and was going to be coming out this year. It looked interesting, of course, got pushed back. But I'm kind of curious to see what a modern take on Candyman would be. Another movie from the 90s that I wanted to touch upon is The People Under the Stairs. So this movie is directed by Wes Craven, and we follow this little kid named Fool. And this is an interesting movie because he breaks into a neighbor's house, and we don't ever get the names of the people that are inside this house, but they have people living under their stairs. And it just kind of, it takes a lot of this kind of like idea of what's going on behind closed doors, but also, the people seem to be okay. Like you can't, you see people at first glance and there seems to be nothing wrong with them, but shit's going on in their home, and this movie's just really, really interesting. It's been a long time since I've seen it. I don't really remember a lot of it. I just remember just being like, whoa, this is a fucking weird ass movie. But it's definitely worth checking out. I think definitely one of Wes Craven's most underrated movies, but one of his best ones and one worth checking out also just as well because it's along the same lines of Ganja and House and Candyman, just touching upon this view of societal view of kind of haves and have nots and how that leads to people having to make choices that aren't necessarily legal in order to survive or that they're kind of just pushed into things and in order to survive. And this movie is just really interesting for that. And, it's got some great jump scares and it's got some nasty shit in it too. So it's always kind of fun to see. I think one of the best movies that really kind of touches upon this was a movie which I think from the title alone you would dismiss. And that's Tales from the Hood. So Tales from the Hood actually came out a few years after the Tales from the Crypt HBO series, and I want to say like right before that series started making movies with Demon Knight. But Tales from the Hood is actually really, really good. Much like Tales from the Crypt, it is an anthology movie, and I love horror anthologies. I'm actually going to touch upon that subject completely in a later episode. But in this movie, we start off with a trio of drug dealers who end up in a mortuary trying to get I believe it's weed. It might be coke. I forget. But in any case, they meet up with the funeral director, Mr. Sims, played by Clarence Williams III. Great character actor, probably best known for being on the Mod Squad in the 60s and 70s, but someone who you would definitely recognize right away, seeing just in the background of tons of movies. And he ends up, these guys are kind of like, hey, yeah, man, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, we're just here to get these drugs. And he ends up kind of regaling them with these stories. And each story kind of is touching upon systemic racism. And even though there's like supernatural elements in them, it's almost like just the regular horrors that people go through. So like, I think like the first two stories are probably the best. The third one's like, you know, it's okay, but it's very much like what you would expect. So in the first movie we have, I mean, sorry, in the first movie, in the first segment, we have this story of a, these cops that stop, this city councilman and end up killing him because he's trying, they beat him to death. He's trying to, he basically tells him, you know, like, I'm going to root out corruption. And he comes back as a zombie and exacts revenge on these different cops. And at the end of it, like, you know, like, it's an interesting kind of, it's pretty straightforward, but there's just a lot of kind of, especially in the 90s, you're going to see, you know, a black man coming back killing a bunch of white cops, you know, and at the time, 95, this is right after the Rodney King beatings, right after the LA riots, you know, there was a lot there that to put in a silly horror movie to really kind of comment on what was going on at the time, and unfortunately still going on. The second story follows this little boy who talks about this monster that beats him up, and it turns out that he's actually telling the truth. The monster that he's referring to is his mom's boyfriend, played by David Alan Greer, who up to this point, and outside of this movie, I've only ever seen in comedies. I mean, I knew him from In Living Color at the time that this came out. But he terrorizes both this little kid and his mom. And he always draws like this monster, and he ends up ripping up this piece of paper. He draws him out at the end of it and destroys them in that way. And then the third story that we get is about, it has to do with the Ku Klux Klan. I don't think it's as good as the other ones, but it kind of following this, like, this whole theme of, like, people are bad and they get their comeuppance, which is kind of great to see just, because you get this, you know, these takes on this. Like, there's a fourth story as well that kind of follows, like I really think the first half of this movie is a lot better than the second half, but yeah, there's four segments overall, and really, you know, that's the thing with anthologies is sometimes some sections are a lot better than others, and so I kind of wanted to highlight those first two. But of course, this movie ends with, you know, these guys finding out that they've been dead all the time, and they're in the mortuary, they were shot, but this movie's just, it's a lot of fun. A lot of it is kind of fucking silly, but you know, I think it's definitely worth checking out, and I think it's definitely better than people remember, and definitely has a lot more to say than you would take from the silly fucking title that it had. And I know as a kid, when I first started, like, that, I thought it sounded stupid. Like, I was like, this sounds like dumb, but you know, don't judge a book by its cover, don't judge a movie by its poster, because sometimes there's a lot more truth, there's a lot more substance to something that looks dumb as shit. And being someone that my favorite movie is like RoboCop, I really should know that, but I mean, I was still a kid, and it took me a long time to kind of give this movie a chance. But speaking of kind of, I don't want to make this sound like every single black horror movie has to have like these deep themes to it. They're there, but I kind of wanted to point out just two really really fun movies. One is from 1974, and that's Sugar Hill, which has to do with the titular Sugar Hill, who is played by Marky Bay, who is a dead ringer in this movie for Pam Grier and Coffee, but I think it's the afro more than anything. But she basically, her boyfriend is killed by some gangsters, so she ends up teaming up with a voodoo queen and Baron Samedi, the Lord of the Dead, to resurrect people as her zombie assassins and kill gangsters. This movie is a lot of fun. It is fucking dumb, but dumb in the best way. I mean, I think the tagline of the movie, "Meet Sugar Hill and her zombie hitman," is enough to kind of get you going. This movie is just, it's fun. It's fucking dumb, but it's like one of those, you know what, just like sit back and enjoy it sort of movies. And it's definitely worth enjoying. Along those same lines, I just want to point out, because I think this is fucking insane, but in 2001, Snoop Dogg came out in a movie called Bones, where he is basically a ghost who kills people. Once again, this movie's not the best, but just the fact that Snoop Dogg is in a movie with Pam Grier, and that Snoop Dogg bragged that, like, he got, like, him being able to kiss Pam Grier in this movie was, like, one of the highlights of his life, because he grew up just idolizing Pam Grier. And I think that's a lot of fun. But kind of going back to the importance of new voices in horror, and the importance of people bringing a new perspective, and how, especially with African American artists, there's a lot to what they're trying to say with their movies. I kind of wanted to end with talking about Jordan Peele's two horror movies. There's only two movies he's directed, and Jordan Peele, who before this was basically known for, you know, Key and Peele, the TV show on Comedy Central, mostly known for comedy, which, if you saw, I mean, I wasn't super familiar with that show before I saw Get Out, but if I had seen it, I don't think I would have been as surprised at how good Get Out was, because Key and Peele has this great thing where it mocks things in a way where there's a lot of there's a lot of layers to what they're saying, but there's also a lot of insight and also a lot of craft that's being done on that show. So that, which is to say, you know, not having been super familiar with it when Get Out came out, I was kind of blown away by this. As I mentioned, you know, Get Out was written and directed by Jordan Peele, stars Daniel Kaluuya as Chris Washington, and Allison Williams as his girlfriend. We also have her family, played by her mom and dad, played by Catherine Keener and Bradley Whitford, and her brother Jeremy, played by Caleb Landry Jones. This movie is fucking great. Like, if you haven't seen it, I don't really want to spoil it, even though it's a few years old. But suffice to say, this is a movie where before it even gets into the real kind of horror elements of it, there's already this horror, I mean, in the sense that, like, just day-to-day sort of situations bring up. Like, the first half of this movie, we follow, Chris, he's going to, well, actually, it starts off with Lakeith Stanfield, who is another great young actor, walking to his car, and he, right away, he sees someone in his car. He's like, nope, I'm gonna go the other way, because I don't think this is gonna go the right way, and he gets abducted, and that's, we get this kind of like weird teaser of this, and then we end up following Daniel Kaluuya's character, Chris, as he is going with his girlfriend, Rose, to go meet her parents, and they get pulled over by the police. And, you know, it's racial profiling right away. He's asking for all his information, and Rose is kind of giving the cop all sorts of shit about it, and you're like, oh, you know, she's like, look at her being progressive and really looking out for her man and everything, And you know what? It's not what it is at all. There's some sinister intentions that Rose has. As we get to their home, you know, he gets to meet some of the people that are working there, and there's just something off about them. And he starts meeting more of the people that are at this party, friends of the family, and they all have this kind of weird fascination with Chris, and you don't really know what's going on. And they all say, like, all this, like, vaguely racist shit that is supposed to kind of sound not racist, but ends up making it sound so much more racist. Stuff like, oh man, you know, if he could, I would have voted for Obama if he could run for a third term, and almost like, you know, like, I'm on your side, sort of like, kind of letting, trying to have Chris kind of, you know, put his guard down, and you're thinking, are these people just fucking weird, or what the hell's going on, right? And oh, fuck it, whatever, I'm gonna just talk about it, like, in case, if you haven't seen it, then I guess spoilers, but it turns out that this is basically modern day slavery, and Rose goes around getting people pretending to be in relationships with them in order for them to be bought by somebody and having their consciousness switched. So this is where we get into some really weird shit. And then, of course, like, there was the, that famous scene with Catherine Keener where she hypnotizes, you know, Chris and puts him in the, is it called the underground, the below? And him being able to kind of rise up and escape. And, of course, you know, when he's able to escape after killing all these terrible white people, the cops show up and you're like, fuck, they're just gonna like kill him. And it turns out to be his friend who's who warned him all along. Get Out is great. It's an important movie, I think, and especially something that I mean, unfortunately, like, outside of those really crazy sci-fi elements, you know, something that really is commenting on society today, you know. And I think this movie really kind of showed that Jordan Peele had something to say, and he had this great insight, and on top of it, that this was someone who loved horror, because you get to see it more in Us, but there's a lot of nod to prior horror movies, which not that you have to have that in a movie for you to show that, like, you know, oh yeah, I know horror, so let me show it to you. But I think it in a way, it's also almost like cultural shorthand when you're able to use scenes, or you're able to crib certain things from other movies that are popular in order to kind of get people like, oh yeah, like, I know where this is going, you know. But Get Out's great. You know, Jordan Peele followed up in 2019 with Us, which I don't think is as good. It's a little muddier than Get Out, but it's great as well. I mean, in Us, we follow, you know, Lupita Nyong'o's Adelaide Wilson and her family, her husband, played by Winston Duke, and her friends, played by Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker. And we end up finding out that there was this abandoned experiment wherein the government was trying to create these other people that these tethered people that would they would use to control the people on the surface and they're underground. And this movie leads to this revolt of the tethered. And, you know, this spoilers, I guess, reveal that Lupita Nyong'o's character actually had switched places with she is the tethered, and she stole the life of Red, who is her other. This movie has a lot to say. Like I said, I think it's a little muddier than Get Out, but this is a movie that I think also has a lot of nods to a lot of different movies. It's kind of cool to see, and it's this interesting idea. And once again, it's fun. I think there's both Get Out and Us have a lot of humor in them, but it's humor in the way of, like, you're kind of trying to break the tension. It's not like this isn't like in Eli Roth's movies where they're just, you know, there's jokes in them. This is like, you know, it's a fucked up situation and someone cracks a joke. Like, I think my favorite one is when Elizabeth Moss, who has been in her house using Siri or Alexa, one of those, she says something like, call, you know, she's trying to say, like, call the police. And, you know, it's like, oh, playing, fuck the police. It's just great. And this movie it's worth checking out. I mean, I think all these movies are worth checking out. And I think, like I said, a lot of them aren't super well known. And it's a different take on some of the things that that you would see in regular horror movies. And I'm sorry, not regular horror, in other horror movies, in non-black horror movies. And I mean, I would throw Blackula and Scream Blackula Scream in there as well, just because it gives you a different point of view. And these movies are definitely worth checking out. That's it for today. Thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow for day 3.